Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Now, John Downing, a very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us again this week.
Hello, Jerry.
Now, we're going to start with housing. And look, there's a deeply depressing story running on Radio Kerry News based on the housing starts for last year. The level of construction of new homes in Kerry is at its lowest in almost 10 years. This is data from the Department of Housing. Works have started in just over 200 homes, new homes, so far this year. It's the lowest number of commencements in the first 10 months of any year since 2016. Now, you put that together with the video that was released by the Spun Out Youth Mental Health Charity, giving advice on young people on what to do and what not to do if they're moving back in with their parents, which was amplified by the Department of Housing's own social media. And that caused consternation and caused a lot of criticism when it comes to what opposition parties said about the government saying, look, you're trying to normalise the disaster that you're not fixing. So a bit of an own goal this week, John.
Yes, absolutely. I can imagine some ninny hammer in the Department of Housing thinking it's a great idea to put that thing on social media without any thought for the political implications. Basically mean the Department of Housing is accepting that you're going to have to go home to mom and pop, and you're going to have to learn how to, which is reasonable, which is perfectly legitimate in its way. The difficulty is the politics of it. And whoever did it hadn't a smidgenette of politics in their small toe. I mean, they could well just have left this to the mental health charity and let them get on with it. We see a lot of changes. Good news is so scarce in relation to housing. You say there the number of housing starts be at a 10-year low in Kerry. I would think that that pattern will be reflected in many places across the country. Always when questioned, government says, well, you know, the final quarter, it's kind of like the cavalry coming over the hill. That's the busiest time. Well, we're in the final quarter. I don't know. It's a very negative thing. We have further turmoil in the rental market. We saw during the week that a couple would have to have a net income in excess of an income in excess of 108,000, a joint income, before they could really have any expectation of getting on the property ladder. But it's increasingly difficult to even get a place to rent, and
we have these remarkable, John, these almost begging letters sent out by the government to landlords, pleading with them not to kick their tenants out before the 1st of March of next year and the new era of 6-year rolling tenancies. Like, that's almost an admission that, oh my God, panic, abandon ship. What have we done? Or am I overplaying it?
Well, they may be. I mean, every time there's a change, people say, well, you know, landlords are just going to flee the market. And anecdotally, yes, particularly the so-called accidental landlords, people who found they had bought a small place, be it a flat or a small two-up-two-down house, their circumstances change, relationships, children, stuff like that. So they're obliged to rent that property because of negative equity. They'd take a ferocious hiding, they'd be left with a heap of debt, so they're trying to soldier on and get on with it. Well, the various hassles then associating now the new rules which apply from March 1st of next year, which would oblige them to give a 6-year tenancy to a tenant, that anecdotally we are told means people are just cutting their losses and getting out. The smaller landlords, we're going to just be left with the larger institutional landlords, we're told. We'll wait and see, because every time, in fairness to the authorities, every time there are changes, there's a hue and cry.
There's always a knock-on consequence, yeah.
Yes, but there's also talk that landlords are going to flee the market in droves. I have a sense that this one is quite serious, because the 6-year tenancy, if you add that to, say, other hassles about about repairs, about maintenance, neighbours' complaints, stuff like all the stuff that rental and letting out can involve. You may well see a lot of people, but it's been a yet another terrible week on top of very many terrible weeks. And let's recall that this time last year, we had re-elected Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to government, partly on the back of claims, unfounded claims, that we had turned the corner on housing.
Yeah, that was the thought at the time. Turned out not to be the case. Separately in the Dáil this week, and Labour and Alan Kelly's been doing a lot of running on this. What are we to make of the story? It's been rumbling away for a while, but Ivana Bacic this week claimed in the Dáil that €1 million in public money went into accommodation, refurbishment and security for former Garda Commissioner Drew Harris. She said it called into question the fairness of the process of his appointment in 2018 if some applicants were unaware of the subsidy. This is a rent-free home for the Garda Commissioner in the Phoenix Park, already one of the highest paid public servants in the state, yet his rent was paid. Sort of an interesting rumbling story in the background, John.
Yeah. Yeah, the part of the difficulty, there are a number of difficulties with this story. I mean, at the time, they very well should have revealed. His appointment was controversial as a former RUC / PSNI senior officer from the north, from a unionist background. A lot of noises off about the security, in national security implications of him being given such a senior post with access to such senior information. That was one element. Secondly, definitely he was a potential target coming to Dublin. So we knew nothing of this until after the event. £1 million. Now, some of that was money spent by the OPW to refurbish the house which they owned in the Phoenix Park. And Garda Síochána paid the OPW the rent. And it was static. He was there for 7 years. So if you say £1 million and you average that over the years, it looks a pretty stark figure. I mean, the main problem with this was it only all comes out after the event.
Yeah.
And it does raise questions. There certainly were security implications of having a Northern Ireland policeman from a unionist background coming into the job in Dublin. And something had to be done there. There is certainly a question about this was basically a very lavish but hidden perk. And Alan Kelly, the former Labour leader, Tipperary TD, Tipperary North TD these days, always talks a lot of good sense. And he's very, sensible and but pretty dogged. And he is pursuing this issue. And the government, one of the big problems is the drip feed of information. We're reminded of the late Ben Dunn. Being arrested in America and all sorts of bother. So he came right out and he revealed absolutely everything surrounding the thing. And it is the best PR advice ever. Because if you're in a spot, just spit it all out there, do it all at once, and don't have a drip feed, which is
indeed
what has happened.
Which is what and continues to happen. No, John, our neutrality again is in the spotlight, or rather, I suppose, our defence capability, our ability to defend ourselves. Garda intelligence sources this week, and this story is another one that's rumbling away with kind of more elements coming every single day. The sources are questioning the Navy's competence in countering the drone threat around Vladimir Zelensky's flight. And now we have EU leaders coming out kind of having to express confidence that all will be grand for the EU presidency and that Ireland's security measures, they'll be up to the security level to try and keep everybody safe during that time. And then yesterday, Helen McEntee announces a new defence spending plan of $1.7 billion by 2030, an increase of 55% on the last plan, new radar, drone defence systems. What are we to make of all of this politically?
Well, here we go again. I mean, there is nothing wrong with military neutrality. There is everything wrong with our dishonesty about it. If you are to be truly neutral, you have to have some reasonable ability to defend ourselves and the seas around us and so on. And we don't. We don't have that capability. Now, there is again, and not for the first time, it's common down the years, was big during the Troubles, tensions between An Garda Síochána and the defense forces. When they operate together, they don't always operate very well together. There are issues to be addressed there. I actually see a lot of sense in what the Irish Navy was saying. When this concerns drones detected in Dublin Bay around the time of the Zelensky visit, and the suspicion, or of course the well-founded suspicion, that these were Russian drones in there to at very least spook the Irish authorities. But the Gardaí were keen that the Navy shoot down these drones. The Navy counter-argue that I think very reasonably that if you fire missiles in to bring down drones, that's fine. But in it's such a tight space around Dublin Bay and in the Irish Sea, the missiles you fire will remain in flight. There is a danger to life and to property as a result. Now, what we need is the drone technology, which is one, as you said there, one of the promises made by Minister for Defence Helen McEntee yesterday at the CORA when she launched this all singing, all dancing defence plan. What we need are drones to take down drones. And we're told we may well have those later, that type of technology later this year. It has been a week, I would say, when we could see a lot of fundamental change on the whole issue of defence. We had IBEC, the business leaders, warning that there are economic implications for Ireland's limited defence competence. And we had Antonio Costa, the president of the EU Council of Ministers in Dublin, meeting with Micheál Martin at government buildings. President Costa is asked, do you think Ireland will be able to defend everybody during the six-month EU presidency when we're going to have all kinds of meetings in Ireland? And, of course, what was the man going to say? There he is in Dublin, standing beside the Taoiseach. What's he going to say? He says, we'll be grand. Meanwhile, we had Cathal Berry, former TD, former founder member of the Ranger Wing, saying, in actual fact, during the six-month presidency from July to December next, we're going to have to rely on a lot of overseas personnel to do the defence work. And we've never had a presidency in such a fraught security situation with Putin's aggression and Trump's indifference. So it's going to be pretty embarrassing when we see the extent of reliance on non-Irish defence personnel in all of this. So I think we may be looking at a week in which the government have realised they finally are going to have to get real about defence spending, particularly about recruiting more people into the Navy, particularly the Air Corps and the Army, and pay them enough to retain them and upskill all of their technology. Remember, there are the undersea cables, there are cyber attacks. War, as we know it, it's not like your World War II movies with tanks rolling down the street. Now it's drones, principally, coming from God knows where, unmarked, unidentified. So we really have to spend far more and have a very serious debate about how we manage neutrality if we do want to keep it.
An interesting point, and that'll pay off politically over the next couple of weeks and months, that's for sure. How much the serious debate is going on between Fianna Fáil or within Fianna Fáil, John? We had the revelation this week that a member of the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party informed Deputy Leader Jack Chambers that Jim Gavin may have had an issue with a former tenant hours before he was chosen as the party's presidential election candidate. Several sources indicating this revelation was made by the team overseeing a review of the party's presidential election with documentary evidence provided, and that's included in the draft version of this famous review of where it all went wrong for Fianna Fáil. Billy Kelleher is out this morning piling on the pressure, saying a serious breach of trust if senior Fianna Fáil members knew about Jim Gavin's tenants. So the pressure all of a sudden again is mounting on this one.
Absolutely. We were supposed to originally have sight. Let's recall the election. The election was the 24th of October. We had originally been promised this report by the 12th of November. Now they say, well, look, parties involved are lawyering up, so to speak. So things have, this review chaired by senior counsel Ciarán O'Loughlin, panels, the new TD Tom Brabazon from Dublin Bay North, Eamon Scanlon, a party veteran back in the Dáil from Sligo, and Senator Margaret Murphy O'Mahony from down your way, from Cork Southwest. So huge pressure. We're told the Micheál Martin has now said, look, we're going to discuss it next week at a special meeting of TDs and senators. Now, we don't know which day as of yet at this point, but I should imagine we'll have considerable revelations over the weekend. This is coming home to roost, and it is a big one for the Taoiseach. He's going to be under very hefty pressure to explain who knew what, where and when, the choice of Jim Gavin, who apart from this incident about his failure to repay €3,300 in overpaid rent to a tenant, apart from that anyway, he turned out to be a hopeless candidate otherwise, yeah, also
politically.
So
yeah,
very big questions, and a very hefty and difficult week ahead for Micheál Martin, Fianna Fáil leader, yeah, and Taoiseach.
John, briefly, and we might talk a bit more about this next week, but the Canova report came out this week. Steak knife, the British Army collusion, you know, reported not to have happened in relation to Dublin Monaghan bombings, brings us back to the dark era of the Troubles. Sinn Féin is saying MI5 are still not allowing the truth to come out. Pádraig McLoughlin, the chief whip, is calling for an urgent Dáil debate. You know, it just reminds us, I suppose, of the work yet to be done politically and otherwise on reconciliation and dealing with legacy, doesn't it?
Yes, and I will credit Micheál Martin and indeed the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Helen McEntee, for a very measured response, where while they expressed their dismay at the revelations, they also said, look, this reminds us that we really have to continue to work on the whole legacy issues. It's worth remembering those bombs in Dublin and Monaghan, June 1974, 35 people killed, 300 injured, and many of them had life-changing injuries. They're still with us, they're still suffering. And the claim, it was a strangely worded claim, that there is no, on that issue, well, there's rampant collusion between the security forces, the RUC, the UDR, the RUC Reserve, the Territorial Army Volunteers, and loyalist paramilitaries. Huge collusion on many other fronts. But on Dublin Monaghan, no evidence of collusion on that issue. However, they go on to say it cannot be categorically excluded. There's another, I think, outrageous claim in the Denton element of this package of reports, which deals with Dublin Monaghan. It says that the UVF, who claimed responsibility for this in 1993, almost 20 years later, that they had the independent capacity to carry out such mass attacks. Well, you'd have to point out, never before and never since had they done anything like that in the southern jurisdiction, anything comparable. I think then Pádraig McLoughlin is right. sorry, O'Loughlin, excuse me, is quite right, because there are scathing comments by the two principals, PSNI Chief Constable John Boucher and the head of the Canova overall investigation, Ian Livingstone, scathing comments about the behaviour of MI5. By the way, they burgled this, they broke into a safe belonging to the Canova investigating group, you know, in the course of all this. I mean, they have no credibility and they cannot be believed. You couldn't believe the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You couldn't believe the Lord's Prayer out of their mouths.
Yeah, John, we're going to have to leave it there. We're over time, but thanks a million for talking to us. We might go to back to that one again next week as the fallout continues. But thanks a million for talking to us, for a call from the Dáil.